Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the 15 Years Later podcast. I am Mike Wilden, as always, with Tim Larson. Tim, how you doing today?
I'm fantastic today. It's a day of summer, and I'm a teacher. How could I be having a bad day? How are you?
This is a good point.
Yep.
I'm good. I've been eating a lot healthier the last couple of weeks, as you know.
You mentioned that. Yeah, you mentioned that.
Yeah. It's the longest I've ever, stuck with an actual, healthy type thing. I don't know if I'd necessarily call it a diet, but I've just changed what I eat and everything like that. And I've just done a couple of things here and there, made it very simple. I'm no expert. I don't know anything about it. I'm just kind of like, all right, I know from the minimal information I have, I'm just going to eat, eat something green every day, eat some fruit every day, eat some, chicken or whatever, and then exercise a little bit. And it's just keep it simple. And I'm feeling really good.
You're feeling better. Good.
Yeah, man. I'm getting a little bit of results or some results out of it. So, but yeah, I'm great. I got it just overall. Also, I had an extra day off today, so that was pretty great too.
That helps. That always helps. Well, as you know, I don't know if we talked about this on the podcast, but in January, I went in with a stomach ache kind of a problem, and the doctor told me I was fat. And so I've been... Well, I've been a couple of things. I've been resentful, but also, I've been playing a little more basketball and jumping some rope and riding a bike and stuff like that. So I'm down a few pounds also, and I'm sort of setting a goal to go a little thinner even, because what I would like to do really is buy more clothes. I'd like to buy skinny clothes and lose enough weight to where it costs me money. I would call that a win.
I love the sound of that.
Yeah, if I do that, though, I'm pretty sure Nikki's going to jump in and go, well, you're not buying the same kind of clothes you wear right now because they're stupid, and I'm going shopping with you. So it could be a win-lose situation. Or, Nikki's pretty stylish, so people like her.
Yeah, I mean, that could be a win, too. That doesn't sound that bad to me.
Yep, I agree.
But yeah, I'm rooting for you to have to spend money because of your healthy choices. That's fantastic.
Thank you. Also, I went to a shooting range today and shot a 9mm pistol. There really aren't 9mm pistols. That's not a thing.
Those pistols are dangerous.
Yeah, you gotta look out for those. I went and shot a 9mm pistol. And also a rifle that took 9mm bullets, which is kind of a cool option. They just rented that at the place. A friend of ours had a membership that he was getting rid of. He just wasn't going to keep because he didn't go there and shoot very often. And you got to pay so much a month. And I think he was like, screw it. I'll just pay when I go, if I feel like going and shooting. He owns the gun. And he had a free pass left over. And he texted a bunch of us and said, does anybody want to go? And Nikki has always wanted to do this. We've talked about it quite a few times. And so I said, if nobody else will take it, Nikki would like to go and I wouldn't mind going. So all we had to do is pay $13 for taking an extra person. And we offered to pay for some ammo, but our friend was like, no, I got it. And I want to go through it anyway. I was just hoping somebody would go with me. So he was happy to have buddies go with. And we went and shot up some paper bad guys. And it was pretty fun. It's cool to have the power in your hand.
That sounds like a lot of fun. It's just for me, guns just scare the hell out of me.
Oh, you absolutely. I am not a, a patriot flag waving gun toting yeehaw kind of guy by any stretch of the imagination. But when I was a kid in Michigan, it's just kind of the lifestyle is you're supposed to go deer hunting in the fall. And so
I see.
Dad took us to, I went to, my brother and I both went through deer hunter safety courses, which is you have to take that if you're going to get a permit or a license to go hunting. So I've shot rifles and I went skeet shooting on that course with a shotgun, and I have shot firearms before, like a handheld pistol before, but the 9mm is pretty smooth in your hand. Like, it feels good. And our friend that went was a really good coach. Like, he talked us through how to stand, what to expect, how to hold it. Don't put your thumb here while you're holding the gun because this kicks back a little bit. And I got to say, Nikki and I lit up the target. Like, we were all over the center of that target. It was pretty fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well,
enjoyed
hey,
it.
good times.
Yeah. Yeah.
So last the last blog and the last podcast were all kind of a Father's Day, you know,
Oh
thing.
yeah.
It was all about my dad. A lot of great feedback from people on that. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it. You know, obviously the most important one for that is my dad. But again, a special thanks to my my brother and my sister for including that little spot at the beginning. Anyway, you know, we got all of that recorded pretty quickly. I mean, we edited the blog like the night before, and then we or something like that, and then we released it, and the night that we released it, we recorded the podcast right away.
That's right.
So we were, I mean, we were a week ahead of schedule just for that.
Yeah.
And then we already had the blog that we're about to talk about edited. Like we did that pretty quickly. I think we did that the same night. So we've been a little bit ahead of the game, which means I haven't really seen a lot of you over the last like week and a half
true.
or so.
I was in Arizona, man.
You know, we recorded a thing with Hilti and we, you know, we had movie group and everything. But outside of that, we haven't really talked much.
Yeah.
So, I was going to say, where were you? You just said you were in Arizona, but tell me about Arizona. What did you do out there?
Almost exclusively golfing. We were in Sedona. One of my friends who bought this timeshare with me in 1994, I think we bought this thing. Dan Sears was on the podcast a while ago. He was on podcast episode 4, I think. And Roland is the other guy. We bought it together years and years ago, and then we had a week of just hanging out, catching up, watching movies at night and golfing all day, and it was fantastic. It was hot. We hit 100 degrees out on the golf course a couple of times. Golfing with my boys who I never get to see, and hanging out with them, and you know, drinking some beers, watching some movies was great. So cheers to Dan and Roland. That was a lot of fun.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was good.
Quick follow-up question. How many holes of golf do you think you played?
I believe we were two holes shy of 200 holes over those 7 days.
Wow.
We this the place we played most of them at is it's a country club in not in Sedona, it's just south of it. And it costs $100 to golf 18 holes there. Like I looked up, if I went today, it would have cost $100 to golf 18 holes. Well, they have a deal that I don't think they made anticipating people like us to show up. And the deal goes, buy a 1 week membership for $400, golf as much as you want. And I think what they think people are going to do with that is golf 18 holes maybe for 5 days, and they get a break. They don't have to pay $500. They just pay $400. Well, we took that as I need to maximize the money that I'm putting out there. So we went for 4 days in a row. We golfed 36 holes. So we would golf, have lunch, go back out and golf again. And I think there was a point where the people at the desk that were giving us the tee times were like, that's not what we meant. Well, that's what you said. So, oh yeah, we really tore it up out there. That was fun. Good stuff.
For you, for making the most of it.
Yeah, it hurt on the plane ride home though. I was sore. Oh my God, was I sore. And I was in the middle aisle, and there was a large fella sitting next to me. And so, you know, when you're in the middle seat, I said middle aisle, I was in the middle seat, and you're kind of scrunched in there anyway. Well, if you sit next to somebody who's kind of, you know, has to take over a little part of your seat, it starts to get uncomfortable. And my back was cramping up. So I was like, but for God's sake, land this plane, people. Land this plane. I need to get off this plane. But hey, small sacrifice to pay.
Yeah, I that hasn't happened to me too many times, but once just last year when I was flying home from the East Coast, and actually I was flying back to Tucson from the East Coast, and I had three flights because there the two towns I was going between didn't really have like a direct flight that was reasonable or affordable for me.
Okay.
I got really sick when I was out on that East Coast for a weekend, And so I was just very, you know, I was all stuffed up. So anytime the plane would start to descend, my ears just felt like they were going to explode.
I'm very familiar with that.
So I don't remember if it was the second or the last one, but on one of the flights I got on, it was Southwest, and they're like, hey, everybody, this is a full flight. So like everybody's going to have a seat taken here. So I go all the way to the back, and like the second to last aisle, there's a guy just, you know, putting on his headphones, and there's a seat, the middle seat next to him. And then right behind him, there's, you know, a larger fella who had, like, I could tell, like, I think he had like a cane. It was just one of those things where it's like, I really don't want to make this guy stand up.
Right.
And I had already like come to understand that that guy had gotten two seats. And it's just okay, like, you could tell, it was like, I was like, I don't want to bother this poor guy. Let's make this, you know, this guy with the headphones, it's like, excuse me. And he just gave me the, and he turned around and he looked at the seat that was in the corner next to the big guy that I didn't want to make move. And he's one right there. Like, he's just, you know, making a big freaking stink about it. Yeah. And I was kind of like, hey, someone's going to sit here eventually anyway. All right, fine. I don't have the energy. I don't feel good enough. You know, I don't have time for your stupid bullshit right now.
Yeah.
So I went and I sat in that seat. And of course somebody sat next to him anyway, because they had to. And then it turned out that the guy that had the two seats, there were so many people on the plane that they actually had to give that other seat to a person. There was a person in the middle seat and me in the window seat, in between, you know, scrunched in between the guy that had gotten the two seat. And again, this is that guy was, he was so nice. I have nothing bad to say about that guy.
Right.
But the jackass that was sitting in front of him, I was just like, the entire flight, I was just like, fuck you.
Yeah.
You know, but I also, as we were landing, was kind of just, you know, had my head in my lap, just covering my ears. So I probably wouldn't have had to, I didn't have to deal with him being like, what's your problem or whatever he would have been like, you know?
Yeah.
So it's probably for the better, but yeah, that's the only experience I've really had with that, but I know what you're talking about.
I was so uncomfortable. And then there was a girl in front of me that had like long blonde hair. And for the most part, she had it like wrapped up in a bun, but every now and then she took it out of the bun, or she kept redoing it. I don't know, for comfort or whatever. And a couple of times there's a movie right in front of me, and she would like put her hair back and half of it comes over my screen. And I've seen Facebook Reels and TikToks about this. Like, is it okay to move that person's hair if it's in front of your screen? And I was like,
right.
Well, we're about to find out the answer to the TikTok question. But we never got to that, because she would sit there for a second and then she would put it back up in a bun. And I was like, okay, because we were about to have something happen. We're going to have an interaction here, because I was not going to watch a movie through your hair on, you know, on the back of the seat. Odds are good I would have been polite, but I was in a bad way there. I was in a bad way. So, yeah. So it's been a hell of a week, but.
Yeah. That's great, though. It sounds like most of it has been a very positive hell of a week. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, hey, let's get into the blog here. You know, this week was another Larson story, another classroom classic.
Yep.
This one is probably my favorite Larson story. I'd maybe give it just a slight edge over the chicken truck, mostly just because I remember this one the best.
Mm-hmm. I think that's why we picked it. Right? We had a few to pick from. Maybe. I think it might be why we picked this one.
I mean, I remember when I was you on stage in high school, and that, you know, we had three nights. The last night we were kind of like trying different stuff. And so I, as the you character, told a Larson story. And so the one I told was this one.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I didn't pull it off 100% like you would, but it's just because it's the one I remember the most. I remember the most completely and probably the most fondly. It cracks me up. I love reading it again. I love hearing you tell me about it again. and you added some extra stuff
mm-hmm.
that was that turned out to be pretty good. So let's you ready to get into it?
Yeah, let's go. Let's get after it.
All right, so this this entry was the classic Larson story, The Day I Tripped My Mother Down the Stairs.
Correction. The Day I Accidentally Tripped My Mother Down the Stairs.
My apologies. You're correct.
It's important for my point of view of the story, really.
Well, yes, very true. Real quick, can you kind of just give a summary of what happened? I know you like to tell this in the form, but just sure. Like in a sentence or two.
Yep.
What is this about?
Okay. I was on the stairs. I was playing with my toys, which was one of my favorite places to play.
As a child.
Yes, of course. Thank you. As a child. That helps. My mother started walking down the stairs with an armful of laundry, so she didn't see that I was on the stairs. And just a lightning bolt of inspiration struck me. I should lay across the stair. I was very short. I was a very short kid, and I was pretty young. Let her go by. And then I could, after she went by, stand up and say, you know, kind of like peekaboo, like, hey, mom, I was here the whole time. And kids just don't think things through. They don't. They just get an idea, or I didn't anyway. And I didn't realize until the very last moment that she was stepping on every stair, and she picked up her foot and she went to step, and it was going to come down on me. So I grabbed her foot out of self-defense. And as a result, she lifted that foot back up, but her momentum had taken her far enough away that she couldn't go back up a step. So she fell forward, hit the laundry, and then tumbled with the laundry down the stairs. Didn't get hurt at all. But it was a bit of a mess. Clothes, mom, just a yard sale at the bottom of the stairs.
Yeah, I love this story so much. So, first of all, you know, in the blog entry, and every time I've ever heard you tell this story, you do a masterful job of telling this story from the point of view of a kid.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I mean, all the imagery of, okay, well, you know, the milk cartons are going to be ships, and the Star Wars guys are down here, and the G.I. Joes are up there, and, you know, all the little, like, the rules you had. Man, just a kid using his imagination. It took me right back to my childhood and doing the same thing. Oh, I absolutely love that.
Thank you. So I have a sister. She's 4 years older than me, and a brother. He's 6 years older than me. And I know your siblings are quite a bit, even the difference is quite a bit bigger than that. I was by myself a lot. And when they went to school, it was just me and mom in the house, and, you know, she'd be doing mom things, and I had a lot of time on my hands by myself. And so my biggest weapon against loneliness was my imagination, and I used it often. And it's almost like I can go back to that thought process anytime I want. So it's actually pretty easy for me to get into the mind of being a kid like that and thinking about the rules that you had at the time, or the idea that you had at the time, or, you know, it's pretty easy for me to get back into that mode.
Yeah, I can tell. And it's
thank you.
I especially know, because it's but it's same here. And maybe that's why maybe that's one of the reasons we've been working so well together on this whole thing.
Sure.
But yeah, man, I had a similar thing. And, you know, I would always have, like, the Lego guys would be battling the Power Rangers.
Okay.
It was always a diplomatic battle to see whose side the dinosaurs would be on. Just thinking about those times, those are the good times, you know.
I like the wild card of the dinosaurs being you didn't know which way that was going to go. That's good.
Yeah,
that's really good. Now, I didn't just play on the stairs. When it was warm out, I remember being on our front porch, because we had a thin little sidewalk that went out to the main sidewalk from our front porch to the sidewalk. I would load that up with toys and other toys on the front porch, and I'd have a similar kind of thing, you know, two different spots. We had a sandbox behind the pool for a short time. It was gone in a hurry, as I recall. There was like a swing set back there, and I feel like, I don't know, we had gotten that from somebody or whatever, but it wasn't there for the longest time that I recall. But I remember when they cleaned out the sandbox, I had buried so many toys in that sand playing with them and forgetting that they were in there that they were like, Tim, I think you lost. I was like, I was wondering where that was. Oh, I left C-3PO under the sand. Damn it. You know,
that makes a lot of sense.
Right.
Right. Based on the movie. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no. So I would take whatever area that I wanted to go play in and just create worlds, you know, like the stairway was good to be a mountain. The sandbox was good to be a desert. The front porch was good to be some other kind of world with two separate zones. And I don't know. It was fun just getting them all out there and then setting them up and then playing with them and playing out the war. Like I just did that over and over and over.
Yeah, man. You know, I think the fun part of, like, at least for me, whenever you had your toys outside, it yep. made the surrounding world just that much bigger, you know, yeah. because they're so small. So you get to experience it from the, you know, the toys' point of view. It's like, this is all, you know, you notice the grass a little more and you notice these things.
Mm-hmm.
And it just suddenly it seemed like, oh, look at all this space I've got for, you know, for these toys to just, you know, this huge world to play with.
Yeah.
Even if it was just your yard. And so normally you're like, all right, well, I'm just running around. But when you, you know, go down to the miniature level, it's, oh man.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I especially just love how big of an imagination you had as a kid. And again, I can relate, but it's, mm-hmm. you do such an amazing job of demonstrating that.
Thank you.
Through this piece. Question. What were some of the rules of engagement for the stairs or any other location as far as the toys went? Like, who could fly, who couldn't?
Yeah.
How did you decide that?
I don't know about the decision making, but I can tell you that there was a couple of guys that could always fly. Like in G.I. Joe, I had Snake Eyes. Snake Eyes could always fly because he was just that cool. The rest of the G.I. Joe guys probably couldn't. There's no rhyme or reason to it. That's just what I had always landed on. Several Star Wars guys could fly. Luke Skywalker, of course. Darth Vader could fly. But then I put in the story that the Matchbox cars were involved also. So I had little people in Matchbox cars that I had imagined. Now, if you played with cars like that, sometimes doors opened on some of the cars and sometimes they didn't. If the doors opened, the car could fly. Like that was kind of a rule. And they were nowhere near as fast as any of the spaceships, of course. And so if you were trying to fly away in a car and there was a spaceship behind you, you were going to get caught. You were going to lose. So there was some of that stuff going on. I always loved having I don't know why I had so many shoelaces, but I always loved tying the shoelaces to the banister and having guys swing up and then almost like a Spider-Man thing. Like you finish the one shoelace and then you flip through the air and you get to the next shoelace. And then, but the stupid thing is, as a kid, like you'd have to get that guy up to the top and then go back down the stairs and get another thing to start coming up the stairs. Like they didn't go up the stairs together. You had to do them separately, right. But it, I don't know, made the game go along a little longer, I guess. But I would get in trouble if I threw too many things down the stairs. You know, like nobody likes dinging up the paint. So the Matchbox cars couldn't really go down the stairs, but the balled up tanks and the milk cartons, those could tumble down the stairs. They wouldn't leave any marks. So I frequently had battles with balled up socks because when they lost, they would just tumble down the stairs. And I enjoyed watching that happen, you know, and I wouldn't get in trouble for it. So extra bonus. You know, whoever was walking by the stairs at the bottom, like usually just mom while everybody else is at school, but I played on them when everybody else was there too. They had to look out. Like it was like, you know, you see shows on a kitchen where they yell corner coming around or behind because they're coming around, or hot knife or hot. When you walked by the bottom of the stairs, you just kind of had to head on a swivel to see if any toys were coming flying down the stairs where I was playing.
Luke Skywalker.
That's right. That's right.
I was the perfect age for this to be the case, but I was very influenced by the movie Toy Story.
Oh,
I was probably 6 or 7 years old. I want to say something roughly around there, maybe give or take a year, when that came out. So I was about the same age that the Andy character would have been.
Yeah,
I was close anyway. And it was a lot of fun too when Toy Story 3 came out and like Andy was in college, and it was just like I was in college, or I was like close anyway. And you know, anybody that was around my age was just like, oh, this is so cool. But yeah, man, growing up, I always like, especially for like the Legos versus Power Rangers things, I would have a very, you know, it was these are the toys that are battling or whatever. But I remember we had like a little like railing up on the second floor before you got to the stairs. And so I'd like set guys up there. And then, you know, you'd have guys kind of set down at the bottom. Same thing, had to kind of make sure that they weren't going to be in the way of my mom or the dog or whatever.
right, right, right.
But yeah, it was so much fun just, you know, setting up like, all right, how are we going to make this happen? Oh, God. Good times.
Side note, maybe as a writer's challenge, maybe we should reverse engineer this thing and go back to some battle that we had and write it Toy Story style of our toys enjoying us playing with them. Maybe that would be a fun exercise to do when we're done with our blog entries and our podcast entries.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I think I told you, I am taking part in a writing challenge.
I love that.
I signed up for a thing.
That's great.
Yeah, it was like NYC Midnight, I want to say, something in New York. So you pay an entry fee, and like however much of that goes to, you know, whatever charity. They have like a few different charities that, you know, you can choose which one yours goes to or whatever. And it's a 500-word fiction challenge.
Okay.
And you don't know what you're supposed to, like, you get your assignment.
Oh,
like the day of. So my first one's going to be in July. And as soon as they send the email out, you have 48 hours to write a 500-word fictional story about whatever it is that they give you. Yeah, I'm really excited for it, especially because it's, you know, I like a good challenge. And for me, short story, long guy, it's going to be a challenge.
Yeah, 500 words that's not like you do that before we even get into part two of the podcast.
Yeah, telling you about this has already probably gotten close to 500 words.
Indeed. Indeed.
So I'm very excited for that.
Love that.
So, We're gonna get into some of these people in a little bit here.
Okay.
But one person you talk about here is your great grandma, and had some games you would play with her. Tell me about her. Tell me about how that went. I love the line with where you're just like, oh yeah, and she would just go along with the rules of whatever the hell game I made up that morning. However you said that.
You know, she would, and the thing is, I get that more from my mother telling me that. I remember playing with my great grandmother in those times. I have an actual memory of one of those games, but more, I just remember my mom saying she would sit with you and play with you all day. And I put that along with a memory of her actually playing with me. And it just kind of makes sense, you know. Her name was Clarice, which incidentally is the name that I gave to the car that I drive. You know how you name your car? I gave it the name Clarice. And she just really enjoyed being a grandma and a great grandma. So one game, I specifically remember sitting with her on a footstool in the middle of our family room and being on a boat. And if you touched the floor, you were in the water. And I'm sure I made it, like, there were sharks probably. You can't possibly go in the water. So at one point, great grandma tried to get up and go do something else. And I was like, no, grandma, you can't do that. There's sharks. You have to stay on the boat. And God love her. She picked up her foot, put it back on the footstool and sat with me until the game was over. You know, like, that was great grandma. And it's true. I remember walking down the street with her as she took me to kindergarten. We had an afternoon kindergarten class. There's morning and there's afternoon. So she would come over and watch me for a while mom was catching up, got Chris and Tracy off to school. And then maybe mom was just cleaning up after breakfast or you know, sweeping this or something. So great grandma was just over there to kind of help out. And she did it just beautifully. Just absolutely loved her.
That's awesome, man.
Mm-hmm.
That is an excellent grandmother right there. Or mm-hmm. You know, great grandma, but you get the point.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I'm this is bringing me back to a lot of stuff too.
Sure.
Well, both of my grandmothers were just fantastic. You know, on my mom's side, she was a lot more active. You know, she'd play basketball with me, she'd play all these games with me and everything like
nice.
That. I remember when we still lived on the farm in the southern town in that story. We had a basketball hoop set up there because that was during the bowls and everything where I was really, really into that. And we made a day of it. We played 4 quarters of basketball. I don't remember exactly what the time was, but we played 4 quarters, and at halftime we had a picnic. And it was just
that's such a grandma thing. You have to have a picnic, man, at halftime.
It was great. And I've always had this weird thing where, like, I want to save the best for last, or at least for later, kind of thing.
Okay.
So, and I know your feelings on Jordan and everything, but, like, I was like, all right, well, I can't be using Jordan yet. So there's a point where, like, I scored a basket, and then my grandma was like, it's like, oh, we got to keep our eyes on that Jordan. He's doing really well, you know. And I was like, actually, that's Bill Wennington. Like, so I didn't want to be using the Jordan one yet. And I think back to that, I was like, man, Jordan, I wish I would have just been, yeah. I wish I would have been just like, yeah, that was Jordan. You know, enjoy
that's
it.
Funny.
Enjoy it while you got it, right? But yeah, so like that, on one side, there was that. And on the other side, my dad's mom was, again, just like, you know, she was always just so like family first above all. I would go over, you know, my parents would drop me off. They're going to go see a show or whatever. At, you know, they drop me off 3, 4 p.m. I'd immediately get my Uno set and we'd play one-on-one Uno.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents would come back at, you know, what, 10, 10:30 at night. We'd still be playing Uno in the same place. We'd maybe stop to eat dinner and that was it. And she would be willing to just play Uno with me the whole time. But even when I was younger, you know, I remember, you know, those like those Easter eggs, the plastic Easter eggs where you just split them in half and that kind of thing.
Hide stuff in them.
For some reason. Yeah. I had a whole bunch of those. And I don't remember what the rules in my head were for this, but I had some game where you'd like roll one of the eggs into another egg and somehow you'd score points. And I was trying to explain this game to her and I don't think she completely got it because I don't think it really actually made sense in hindsight, but I mean, she tried. She's like, all right, here. And she played this egg rolling game with me just on a whim. She's like, yeah, all right, we'll go with it. And that was just, that was her, you know, that was grandma.
Yeah.
So yeah, man, I had fond memories. I'm not trying to just, you know, compare and contrast everything that you're saying. It's just that, you know, as fun as this Larson story always has been, the additional things that you add into it, and now that I'm, you know, I've grown up a lot more, I'm more and I can actually kind of reflect on some of the things you talk about in the story, it's like, man, it's pretty cool. Another one of those parallels, if you will.
I'll take that all day. I started telling that story just to entertain classes when we needed a break in between math things. But it really has become endearing for a long time. And I mean, if it makes people think about being a kid and happy memories, I mean, I'm all for that. Like, why do we tell stories in the first place if we don't do it for that reason, right?
Yeah. On that note, you know, as much as I love the story for the comedy purposes, I always have. And as much as I've enjoyed reflecting, you know, as I've gotten a little older and been able to appreciate, you know, what we just were talking about, you know, just the imagination and the parallels there. Since we're talking about great grandma, you know, you started this entry out in a way that you don't usually tell this story.
That's true.
You added some stuff to it, which I really think added a lot to the blog entry and just the blog as a whole. It really, I think, contributed a lot to the overall story that we're telling. You had a lot of strong women that that raised you.
Yeah.
And I absolutely loved this. I thought this is very telling. This, I think, you know, goes to show just a lot of who you are and a lot of your character and kind of where it's been developed from. And it's something I didn't really know, you know, just about you, just as a person and everything. You know, tell me about great grandma. Tell me about grandma, Aunt Katie, mom, everybody mentioned in there. And then anybody maybe that you didn't mention, you know, tell me about these women if you can. And I kind of just want to know, like, how did being raised by so many just strong, just excellent women, do you think affected, how do you think that affected you in the short term as a kid and also in the long term, like today, like just with who you are as a person, how do you think that affected you and molded you as just a human being?
Well, I'll tell you that this is a great question because this leads me into being able to show some serious appreciation that I don't think I had when I was a kid, you know, like you don't realize it when you're growing up. As I said, yes, there's, you can tell there's a volume of like you said, just women who loved being moms and grandmas and aunts, loved being around the kids, and they spent so much time with us to help us, you know, just grow and learn. But I mean, my mom is, I call her the saint in this thing for a reason. I mean, she put up with everything that I did, and I was so stupid. It's just so, like, I'm not that much better now, honestly, but when I was younger, I didn't realize I was being stupid, you know, and she put up with all of it, and she did it with so much compassion, you know. And I'll tell you what, like, I'll actually just challenge some people that listen to this. A lot of you guys know my mom. So how could we do this? Like, send, go to 15-years-later.com and leave us a note about how much, you've appreciated my mom as well. Like, it wasn't just me. She's like that for everybody. But let's go back to that and answer your question. Great grandma, you know, I remember something else about her. My dad had brought home from work a cassette player. And maybe you might have seen some of these in school when you were there, if they were still around. This is a very old technology, but there's a lot of them that were about the size of a short loaf of bread, where there was a speaker on the end of it, and it has a long rectangle.
My grandma had stuff like that too. We have a couple of cassettes recorded of my grandma playing the organ, in fact.
Okay. So this one, it would have a little thing flip up closer to you, and you'd put the cassette in it. And then there were five little buttons closest to you. Well, my dad also brought home a microphone, which was this tiny little square, not much bigger than an Oreo, maybe two Oreos together. And then it had a little wire on it, and you plugged it into the side of the cassette recorder. And it had an on-off button. And so you'd flick it on and you could push down play and record at the same time on the cassette recorder. And then I would just make up songs. I would just start singing. And they were the stupidest songs. But I remember I recorded some song about, I don't know, I knew grandma liked country music. So I talked about birds in a valley or something. I sang about being in a valley. And then we played it for my great grandmother. It's the most awful thing you've probably ever heard in your life, but she pretended like it was the best thing she'd ever heard. And she was like, keep writing me songs. I want to hear more. And so whenever mom told me that great grandma was coming over, I'd go hit record and make up a song and play it for her. And she just always thought, or always said, that she loved hearing them. And that's just a grandma being a grandma, right? Like she
what
just
a champ.
Right.
That's great.
To listen to that horrible stuff and say, I love it. That's what it's like to be a grandma. So let me tell you a funny story about my, not my great grandmother, but my grandmother. I took Nikki out to meet her, before we got married, where she lived in Northern Michigan. And we all went, my mom and dad happened to come out on the same weekend. So I already lived in Illinois. Nikki and I are driving in from Illinois, and my parents drive up from the Detroit area, and we're all going to meet and hang out. Now, originally, this was just me introducing my wife to my grandmother, or my fiance at the time, probably. And my mom and dad just completely stole our weekend and said, we're coming up. And I was like, guys, what the hell? You know? But anyway, we get there. We're going out to dinner, and my grandmother is on fire. Like, she's starting to turn into an old lady, you know? My dad's all proud of his brand new minivan. It's the coolest thing in the world. It's got doors that open on both sides. And he went to fill up the tank at a gas station, and she just went out to go out and have a cigarette. Grandma smoked. And she opened up the door on the driver's side and broke the gas cap, because you don't normally have a door that opens on that side. But the cool engineering feat of this minivan was it opened on both sides. And when he had just gotten it like a week before, and she broke that gas cap. He was so frustrated with her. And she's like, well, I'm going to go have a cigarette. she didn't want to have anything to do with dad being upset about it. And then, we're coming back from this restaurant, and she had done a couple of funny things, but we saw some wild turkeys on the side of the road, which is a cool thing in Northern Michigan. You can see all kinds of wildlife. And Nikki says, aren't those like really mean? Like, you don't want to go near them? And grandma goes, yeah, you can eat them. And we're all like, that answer doesn't make any sense. Grandma, I don't understand what you're talking about. And I think she thought, Nikki asked if they're lean, as in non-fatty, like they're gamey. But I mean, that's just grandma. You know, she just kind of went through the world whistling her own tune, and she loved to be around you. And most of the time she wasn't even trying to be funny, and she was hilarious. And then of course we all know about Aunt Kitty, and my mom's sister is Aunt Kathy. She was also fantastic. I think that as a result of being around all these women in my life that were great to me, it has always been easy for me to talk to girls. I think that's the biggest thing. I remember after, so I went to a Catholic school from first grade through eighth grade. So I didn't have like a different elementary school and middle school experience. We were eight years together. And then like 2 years later, we're sophomores. A whole bunch of us get together, and some of the other moms pointed out to my mom that it's a whole bunch of dudes talking to each other, and it's Tim talking to all the girls as always. My mom told me that later, like, as usual, all the boys are talking to each other and Tim is talking to all the girls. And my mom told me that later, and I was like, I didn't even realize that that happened. And I think that's to do with the upbringing that I had. Like, I was just always around fantastic female characters, and it was a comfort zone for me. You know, my older sister is the closest one to me, and she would always give me lectures about, you know, how to talk to girls and how to be nice to girls and, you know, don't be rude. And, you know, and so through all of that, I don't know. I've always just been really comfortable being around and talking to and having a lot of friends who are girls, where some people are just, guys are my friends and girls are, you know, like an enigma. Right.
Yeah. I kind of know what you mean there. I've always felt comfortable talking to women unless I had interest in them. Then of course, you know,
Yeah.
Then it's a different ball game. But yeah,
okay.
no, I know what you mean.
I had that problem a bit also. I don't want to say that I didn't.
But no, I'm gonna confirm this or deny it, but I feel like just the way you treat other people and specifically how you treat women definitely it improves, not just how you talk to women, but also just how you relate to them and how you treat other people. I think is definitely, you definitely have more of a head start when you have, you know, strong female characters,
yeah,
like you said, to
yeah,
grow up with. You know, for me, my grandparent, you know, my grandparents, my grandma's, my mom, my sister, and you know, I was a little older, but I was still a kid when my sister-in-law came around too. And it's just, you know, a lot of women as role models, I think, is honestly only a good thing.
Right, a lot of great guidance. I was in town last year, and I cooked dinner for the family. I went in for Christmas and stayed up late with my mom and my niece and her son, who helped me out cooking and stuff. And we were just going over that past stuff. And that was a moment where I really, as we were talking about it, brought up the great grandma stuff and the grandma stuff. And I was talking about, you know, seeing Aunt Kitty the next day. And it just kind of hit me at once. Like, well, I give my grandfather a lot of credit for being a great, you know, role model, but I forgot a whole bunch of people that were really important to me. And I just kind of had a clarity moment, and that was just last winter, where I was like, I never really gave the appreciation to all of my aunts and grandmas that I should have, because damn, they spent a lot of time with me and helped me figure the world out.
I love the tribute you kind of paid to them at the beginning of this.
Yeah.
And it was a great way to actually lead into the story too. You know, the chicken
truck,
because
I took one out. I took one out. Yeah.
But the chicken truck story is an enigma in itself, just like a lot of Larson stories are. And when we first started this, we were like, it would be fun to put a couple of Larson stories in here. You know, if the theme is, hey, we're telling stories back and forth, you got to tell a couple of Larson stories.
Yeah.
They fit right in.
Yeah.
I really like, yeah, I mean, I like the way you wrote the chicken truck one too, but I really like this one because of that. Because this isn't just another Larson story. This was, you know, more reflection, more appreciation. This had more heart. You've used that phrase a few times.
Sure.
As we've done the podcast, this had a lot more heart than just telling a funny story. And I just loved it.
Thank you.
So, you know, you were talking about your grandma, how your grandma smoked, and she's like, all right, I'm going to grab a cigarette. Being raised by my mother, who was a career nurse, absolute sweetheart, never, you know, hurt a fly, but randomly would have that mom moment where unprompted, she'd just be like, if I ever catch you smoking, I'll beat your ass.
Yeah, you talked about that last podcast. That's fantastic. Yeah.
And I never had any urge to smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I was just impressionable enough, at least from her, where, you know, since my grandma smoked, I would kind of get on her case about it as a kid. Like, you shouldn't be doing that.
Right.
And, you know, in hindsight, she did that her whole life. Like, who's going to stop? Why is she going to stop now? You know, like,
that's right.
But as a kid, I didn't get that. So I was like, oh, you really shouldn't smoke, Grandma. So she would, you know, avoid smoking around me because of that. And I remember once I went outside and found, you know, caught her by the car with a cigarette, and she kind of started laughing because she was like walking around the other side of the car when I went to see, like, trying to get away from me. But God, I just what wonderful human beings, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to tell you a quick funny story on that, actually.
Okay.
So along with that, the whole just say no to drugs thing, again, as a child, I was 5 or 6 years old when this happened, but my brother and sister had a big party on the farm, and my brother offered me a beer as a kid. And he was kind of just joking anyway. But he's like, hey, do you want a beer? And I couldn't think of a reason to say no, like that wouldn't be if it. So I just said, no, thanks. I'm allergic.
Okay.
So my brother and sister to this day will bring that up. Like, oh, yeah, that's right. You're allergic. You can't have one, can you?
Right.
And I'm like, I was just a kid coming up with an excuse. I don't, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, it's just, again, these people in our lives, and again, these women in our lives, I think are just such fantastic role models. And I loved hearing about your side of it, because honestly, before I read your addition to this story, I didn't know any of that about you.
Sure.
I knew of Aunt Kitty. I knew of your mom, but I didn't really, I guess I wasn't aware of how big of an impact they had on you.
Yeah.
And it makes perfect sense, but it was really cool hearing about that
now,
and seeing that, you know, that appreciation of them from you.
Yeah. And I enjoyed reflecting on that and writing on that and, you know, remembering all the love. Like, there, a lot of them are gone now, right? But they weren't without discipline either, because there's clearly a paddle involved in this story. And you know what? We could get into an entire debate about how to raise kids and discipline and stuff. And lots of people do get into that debate. I will just say that our discipline was a paddle that was in a drawer in the kitchen. And it was, I can see right now. So our kitchen is the sink and the cabinets are all on one wall, right? There's not like a counter that's L-shaped. It's all on one wall. And the sink is in the middle. And on the right and the left of the sink were three drawers on each side, and then three cabinets underneath. And wow, it's funny. Like, I haven't been in that house in forever, but I could tell you where everything goes in each one of those cabinets. But anyway, the farthest drawer to the left is where it was almost like a little bit of a junk drawer. But that's where they kept the paddle. And we got it with the paddle when we did something at least that they felt we deserved to get it with the paddle for. And this is what it was. Do you know the game where you have the paddle and the rubber band and the ball and you're trying to keep the ball going?
Yeah, I think it's just paddleball.
Is it just called paddleball? I see. I thought paddleball was like on the beach where a ball is not connected to the paddle. But anyway, you guys know what I'm talking about. It's a paddle. There's a rubber band. There's a ball and you're trying to keep it going. Well, the rubber band doesn't last. Sooner or later, the rubber band breaks and then you throw the ball at your brother as hard as you can. And now it's no longer a thing. Well, my parents, if they saw the rubber band break, that paddle turned into the paddle and it went in the drawer. And that's what they got you with if you were doing something wrong. And so that drawer had a very distinctive squeak. And so I could be upstairs playing, like, you know, with my G.I. Joe guys, and I could hear that squeak downstairs, and I would immediately like perk up and go, what the hell? What's going on? What did I do? I didn't leave my shoes by the door. I didn't put my jacket on the floor. That's on the hook. I didn't, you know, you start reflecting about your day, basically. And then you'd hear like mom would yell, you know, my brother's first and middle name, and be like, okay, cool. Chris is in trouble. I'll go back to playing, you know. But if you heard the squeak, you immediately went on alert. And so the funny thing is, I remember one Christmas. Now, we had separate Christmases. On Christmas morning, we were around the Christmas tree. We opened our presents. And on Christmas evening, we went to dinner with Grandma and Grandpa. These are the ones that you know of. And Aunt Kathy and Uncle Bruce would come over and just immediate family Christmas. That was every Christmas. A week before that or so, there was the Larson side Christmas party. And there were so many of us. That's where Brian is involved in his side of the family. They would do like certain uncles would buy a present for certain kids. They had like a you only had to buy for one kid kind of thing. I remember one year, I don't think I got it. I think my brother got it as a present, but it was a pack of six of the paddleball game that Chris got for Christmas. They bought him a thing that they're going to beat us with later and gave it as a Christmas present. Like, what kind of sick shit is that? You know, that, And my brother opens it. He's like, "You got to be kidding me!" And my dad is looking at his brother who bought it and giving him a wink, like, "Nice job, nice job. I like what you're doing there."
That is some Godfather shit right there. That's, oh man.
Enjoy your Christmas present. So we never wanted to play with the damn thing. My dad be like, "Hey, don't you want to play with the paddleball game?" No, because at that point it's still a game. You know, it doesn't go in the drawer until it's broke.
You know, he was totally asking you that just to get a rise out of you guys, obviously.
Yep. Yep.
But that's funny. Cruel, but funny.
Yep. And those were, nowadays, those are plastic. And back in the day, they were like thin wood. And it would break. After a couple of whoopings, it would break right over your ass. And at one point, I distinctly remember having to pull a splinter out of my brother's ass for getting whooped with a paddle. Yeah. That's childhood right there. That's childhood. Yeah.
My thing, I didn't really get, I think I got spanked a few times, but like my big thing was when I would get grounded. And when I got grounded, it specifically meant from video games. Because I was, you know, I was that age where I first started, you know, I had a Sega Genesis when I was little. And we had Sonic the Hedgehog 2, and my sister and I would play that all the time, you know, and and that's kind of a fun little bonding thing we have still today. But, you know, she was in, you know, high school and then college and everything. And I was just a little kid, but we just loved playing this game. And I remember when she finally like beat like the final level there, like there are two like bosses in that last level. And there was one where we just kept on having trouble beating it. And then she beat it one day and like wrote down the directions on how to do it.
Oh, that's
like,
cool.
Okay, down, you go under, over, whatever. And so like that was kind of your key. And then if you got to the second boss, you're just kind of on your own. But yeah, I mean, ever since I was little, I always had, you know, video games, which are just obviously a brilliant distraction. And yeah, I spent a lot of time with video games back in the day. So, of course, my thing was I'd get grounded from video games. I think my parents knew that it was like if I was grounded, which meant I stayed in the house. Well, yeah, I also that means I can't have friends over, which, you know, that sucks.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can fend for myself for a little while if I need to. You know, we were just talking about imagination, kind of just, you know, being by yourself as a kid. I had a lot of experience with that. And so, you know, whatever system it was, or maybe it was a Game Boy, they're like, "All right, give me the damn Game Boy. You're grounded for however long." And I'd just be like, "Ugh." But that was my big thing.
It's like parents taking away phones nowadays, right?
Yeah. That would probably be the equivalent of it, I imagine. But that always, I guess, I don't know if it worked because I felt like it happened a lot, but you would think if it worked, maybe it wouldn't happen as often, but it was effective in me trying to not get in trouble because I didn't want to get grounded kind of thing.
Yep.
But yeah. Do you have anything else on this story that you want to talk about or ask or just anything?
I do.
Any
I've got a good,
thoughts?
I've got a good cap for this. While I was in Arizona, just out of curiosity, I called my mom to see if she's been reading the blogs. I don't think she's been listening to the podcasts. That's probably a lot of technology for mom, or time commitment. I don't know. But I was just wondering because I knew she'd read the first several. And so knowing that this was
real quick, I found out my mom has been listening to the podcast, but hasn't really been reading the blogs.
Oh, that's funny. We'll take it, right? We'll take it.
There is a reason for that, but it's still just kind of a funny, you know, just wanted to throw that in there. Anyways, please go on. I didn't mean to cut you off there. All right.
No, that's okay.
You know what I'm trying to say.
So just knowing that this one's coming up, it's like, hey, have you been reading these? Because I'd like to give you a heads up for what's coming up. Right. And so she says, this, by the way, is a lovely compliment. She said, "I have been reading them. I just read the one about Mike's father." And I was like, "Then you're all caught up." And she said, it's funny. She didn't know you by name. She's like, "Well, the guy you're writing this with, what's his name?" And I was like, how do you not, how have you read these and you don't know that? Like, come on, man. But anyway, she said he's a really, really good writer. And my mom is a critique of writing. And she'd always critiqued my stuff when I was younger. And so you have a stamp of approval from my mother for your style of writing, which I think is fantastic.
Oh, thank you for passing that along. Thanks to your mom for the compliment too. That's really nice to hear. That's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. She didn't say anything about my writing, but she said that yours is really good.
By the way, my dad, my dad didn't read that article. I think he kept on getting sidetracked, and I spent most of that weekend with him. So a couple days beforehand, I was hanging out with him.
Yeah.
And I asked if he'd read it. He's like, nope. And so I was like, do you remember how to pull it up? And he's like, nope. You know, just kind of technology thing. So I just got to the website for him and everything, and bookmarked it for him. And so he read it, and he was just sitting there reading it. I was like, well, this is kind of weird. This is exactly what I didn't want to happen.
Yeah, this is awkward.
You read this while I'm sitting here.
Right.
But I went off and did something, and this is also kind of a very dad thing. Didn't take a lot of credit for anything. I just, you know, he read it, and then, you know, we were going somewhere. I was like, so what did you think? He's like, oh, it's really, really good, really well written. And I was like, really, that all you got there? Like, I didn't say that, but I was kind of waiting for him.
Put my heart on a sleeve here. Yeah.
And then he just kind of threw in there. He's like, I think you give me a little too much credit, but it was really well written. And
there you go.
Such a dad thing,
there
you know,
you go.
Such a John Wilden. And, but yeah, that's all he said, but that's all I needed. That was just, you know,
yep.
It was really sweet. I don't think he probably wanted to tell me what he was feeling about it, obviously, but it was, that's all I needed to hear.
Well, it's cool. I mean, it's cool that you said it and that he read it, right? I told my mom, I said, you know, I tell all these stories in the classroom, right? She said, yep, I've heard all about it. And I said, she gave me a little bit of pushback on some of the stories I've told. She's like, well, it's not like we didn't have any money. And I was like, Mom, I'm telling a story here. The details aren't that important. I said, but anyway, do you remember the story about me getting hit by the truck? And she's like, yeah, I read that. It's some of it's not quite accurate, but, and I was like, all right. And so I go, did I remember this correctly or did I make this up? Do you remember the day that I tripped you down the stairs? And she said, yeah, that never happened. I made it all up, what? Mike. Apparently, according to my mom, I made it all. It never happened.
What was it? A dream? What was?
I have no idea. Or she forgot it. I don't know. But as we talk about me being an imaginative kid, I've been reflecting on that all week. Like, how is it possible that didn't happen? Because I've been telling this like it's a real thing because I believe it's a real thing.
It's so, you tell it so vividly.
I know. I don't understand.
You tell it like you remember it like it was yesterday.
Either I did so many goofy things that she just doesn't remember it, or it's like I went to lay on the stair and I went to do it and I went, oh, this isn't going to work. And what happens is the movie I made in my head about what would have happened. And I just decided it's true. But either way.
Yeah. I mean, either of those do sound possible.
It's a vivid memory in my head, but my mom says that it's not real. And I thought that you would think that is absolutely hilarious.
God, that's funny. Oh man. That makes me think about like some of the early memories I have. Cause I have a couple of stories about my earliest memories and, you know, I always assume that they were a little skewed based on, I experienced this when I was 4. So who knows how much of this, but like, man, you're making me question reality right now. That's just.
Well, if anybody's wondering how much of a bullshitter I am, apparently it's about a flight of stairs. I'm a flight of stairs worth of bullshit.
Yeah, either that or she just doesn't remember it. But I gotta lean on that because it's such a good story. I don't want to believe that it didn't happen, although that is hilarious.
All of the visuals I have in my head as if it happened. And so we'll just have to chuck this up to maybe I remember it. She doesn't. Maybe I don't. But then I asked her, I went, okay, so did I or did I not wreck the kitchen floor with a plunger? And she goes, oh, you definitely did that. So there you go. There you go.
Maybe the things that cause property damage are more vivid. Because if she didn't get hurt from the laundry tumble, it was probably one of those like, ugh, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's too good. I don't know how we can top that for this part.
Shut it down. I made it up. According to my mom, I made it all up. That's the imagination that I had. I had cars flying. I had G.I. Joe guys flying in milk cartons. And apparently I made up an entire story about tripping my mother down the stairs.
Yeah. And apparently there were no chickens on the chicken truck either.
That's my sister. Yeah. Yeah. Your whole childhood isn't real.
Yeah. Thanks for that. That's going to, I'm going to have trouble getting to sleep tonight for that one.
Sorry about that.
Well, with that being said, let's put a bow on this show.
Let's call it a day and move on to part three. I'll see you guys in part three.
Man, I got to tell you, you're kind of ruining my childhood a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I was sitting outside of a laundromat in Arizona talking to my mom on the phone. And when she said, no, you made it up, my heart sank like, wow, that's already published. I don't really know. I don't know how this is going to go, but I don't think we can say that I made it up, because I'm like, there's some of our stories that I tell where I know I've embellished some facts just to make it a better story. I mean, I do that all the time. But I know that I embellished those parts. Like, I actually went through and made it up. I don't remember making this up. This feels real to me. So I don't feel like I lied to anybody. And I still think it's possible my mother just doesn't remember it quite. I did a bunch of dumb shit when I was a kid. Maybe it just piled in there with all the other ones and she doesn't remember it.
I hope so. Well, hey. I think that'll probably be a wrap on the day that Larson accidentally tripped his mother down the stairs. A very sad wrap at that.
Either way, it's still a good story. You gotta admit it's a good story either way.
It is.
If I made it up, I should make up more of them. Honestly, I should just keep making them up.
True. I don't know. I feel that's got to be one she just doesn't remember. That's just got to be. And maybe it's wishful thinking. But anyway, let's look forward to next week. The blog and the podcast is going to be, the blog's going to be written by me.
Yep.
Larson, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about what we're in store for here?
I like this one a lot. This is going to be blog episode number 14. The title of it will be How to Succeed at Failing Your Dream. You left high school, and I remember young Mike Wilden wanting to be some kind of thespian. I remembered stand-up comedy. I remembered you being involved in the theater stuff, and I remembered you wanting that to go with you. And I brought that up the first time that we met years ago now at Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yes, you did.
And I asked, how did that go? Like, how did, you know, what's the story been with that? And this is basically your version of how that went and your reflection upon it. And so we're getting into the stand-up comedy career of young Mike Wilden, and it's a wonderful story for me. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, there are a few stories. I mean, I have an overall larger point to it at the end, but you know, my time in comedy, I think I took a lot from it, even if I'm not, you know, recording my fourth Netflix special right now or anything.
Mm-hmm.
The time that I did have it, and I think affected me a lot in a lot of mostly positive ways. I met some great people, a couple of them I still talk to today. Yeah. One of them I'm hoping can join us next time on the podcast, but we'll see.
We're going to meet some characters. We're definitely going to meet some characters here.
Yeah, leading into my larger overall point, I try and tell a I just kind of tell a few stories from my time as a comedian that are just kind of goofy, and then try and give a little lesson from them. But
yeah,
there's a much larger overall point, and I think you should all just read to find out what that is.
Indeed. Indeed. So I think we can call this an end to podcast episode number 13. If you would like to read the next blog episode, find that at 15-years-later.com. That's a numerical 15 with hyphens, 15-years-later.com. You can also reach out to us or follow us on social media. Mike, tell them where they can reach us on social media.
We are on Instagram, which is probably the most active of the social media that we have. We are also on Threads. Both are at 15 Years Later Official. You can also email us at 15yearslaterofficial@gmail.com, also a numerical 1 and 5. Yeah, thank you guys so much for, as always, for following along, reading, listening, both. This has been great. Don't forget, you can leave us a message on the actual site, 15-years-later.com, as well.
Mm-hmm.
And one more reminder, we are partnered with the SPDM Crew Podcasting Network.
Yeah, this has been a fun episode. Thanks again for listening and for reading and all the comments. We appreciate all of you guys. Have yourselves a great week.
Have a good night, everybody.